opportunity to engage here now with the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry that is conducting the interviews. We appreciate your time, and what we have made available to you on your left or right is the list of committee members, some of which are in the house as we talk, not their own houses, of course, and some are attending just one or two other committees of which they are part of. But I'm sure we can proceed, and of course we're all cognizant of time. We do want to ensure that every person interviewed has 40 minutes, I think. But of course we're trying to cap it there. So I'm Jo Fung, Chairperson of Trade Portfolio Committee of Trade and Industry. Mr. Andre Hellens on my right is the man with whom you have been dealing. He's the committee secretary. And on my left is the content specialist. And that is Marco Hurley. So let's immediately begin the process. I hope you're relaxed. You will respond to the questions as they are asked. Just switch on your mic when you respond. And when you've completed your response, you will personally switch it off again. So let's see from the committee through a show of hands. We have Honourable Kamala, Honourable Mpashlele, Honourable Khadebe, Honourable Mandebetezen, in that order. Thank you.
Could you briefly tell us about your past experience and relate that to the contribution you made to the board? Further to that, what, in your opinion, would be the main criteria for a board member? Thank you.
Thank you very much, member of Portfolio Committee, and to all other members of Portfolio Committee. I am Obed Mzegaifani Shabangu from KwaZulu Natal, particularly from Ladysmith and Nambi. I must be very honest here. I don't have academic qualifications, but I learned along the way. Around late 1970s, I was involved in a trade union as a member of the CAU. As a member of the CAU, I ended up being appointed as an organizer, almost 14 years. Then I left thereafter. I was involved in various government parastatals as a board member or as a council member in different at different levels, particularly around in KwaZulu-Natal as well as national. In a nutshell, I would like to say my experience is around of corporate governance in relation to policy development and also fiduciary responsibility, depending to the terms and conditions of a particular staff. So therefore, I think I served in various committees, in various boards. I have a very, very extensive knowledge in terms of how to run a parastatal, how to run some boards. So at the provincial level, as well as even at the local level, I can also articulate at that level. But in this case, I will refer to the provincial as well as the national level. Therefore, I cannot be specific unless there is a direct question in relation to a particular area of focus. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Honourable Mpashlele.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. Bob Shaba. What I would envisage as the main function of the National Recovery Fund, or what do you think these are the key functions of the National Recovery Fund?
Thank you very much. Firstly, the National Recovery Fund is one of the very critical institutions in South Africa. is one of the institutions which is carrying a huge responsibility. As we know, all of us, the people of South Africa, they are paying a lot in terms of their own expenses. But when it comes to government side, you have to make sure if you're sitting there, you must be one among the many people who make sure the distribution of those funds are in line with the policy of the National Notary Board. And also, when you serve in a particular committee there, depending what type of a committee, what is more important is to adhere to the mandate of that committee, because you cannot sit in all committees. But in this case, for me, what I can say, because that's what I have done in so many past years, and to represent the interest of the poor community, including the employees of a particular institution, when it comes to corporate affairs. So in this case, the areas of focus, one is the distribution of financial resources of the institution, and also to make sure that the board is accounting to a shareholder. So that is very, very important. And also harmonize the relationship between the portfolio committee, between the shareholder and the board, as well as the stakeholder or relevant institutions which are very critical in terms of the National Notary Board. Those are the key areas which we have to satisfy as a member of the board at all times. Thanks.
Honorable
Khadebe. The first thing which I'd like to ask is, as one of the functions of the board is to advise the minister on the efficacy of their current legislation, in your opinion, what are some of the challenges which are encountered in implementing this legislation?
Thanks. What in fact I can, because I want to be honest, I don't have expertise around of this industry, because I've never been part of that. I will talk as someone, you know, in general, in particular. As you said, correct, the board members, they have to advise accordingly the minister, the relevant minister. In this case, the Minister of Trade and Industry. So all in all matters, particularly when it comes to the specific mandate from time to time, what I can say here, the way to advise the, as I said earlier, or the shareholder, the minister in this case, is to advise the minister on critical matters in relation to a mandate at a particular time. As we know, each and every year, there is a specific mandate you have to carry in order to fulfill the requirements of the institution, and also the interest of the people who are shareholders of the very same institution. So therefore, I can say here, at a particular time, we find a very fundamental issue which we have to deal with the minister on a particular issue before you come to the conclusion, because you cannot conclude a particular fundamental issue without proper consultation with the minister and the relevant institutions around of the National Notary Board. That's what I can say. Thank you.
Thank you.
Honourable Mr. Vice
President.
Thank you. Mr. Shabanga, you may have heard that some NGOs and other institutions are quite dependent on the provision of promised lottery funding to implement certain worthwhile projects. Now, often this funding is not provided within the appropriate time frames, and long delays are experienced. How would you address the delays in distributing funding from the fund to these NGOs? And what remedial actions would you propose to improve the aiding relations between the National Lottery Board and the distributing agencies?
Okay, thank you. I think the first point before you do anything, when you enter there inside, you have to know the status quo, what is currently happening, what are the current challenges. Before you do anything, in this case I'm referring to a strategic planning or a strategic workshop of some sort, and also other input as to what is taking place, what are the challenges currently, taking into account the internal human resources internal, as well as also the time frame. You know, particularly, let me say, because I'm coming from NGO side, I know very well it is not easy currently, I can be honest, to access funding from the very same institution because of internal dynamics. That's why I'm saying one of the big challenges which we are facing with is to fail to comply with your own time frame, with your own agenda. If I'm referring to agenda, I'm referring to a strategic plan, as the board to say, these are the volumes of work in our hands. Now, so what we need to do in order to unpack these particular challenges, and also take into account the proper consultation with the relevant, for the, let me say, like a particular NGO put an application, you will find first month that NGO is not aware whether that application was received or not. You know, it's one of the challenges which people will find moving around, you know, without knowing their status. Firstly, the board must make sure that all people who apply, the institution must acknowledge and also lay down the time frames and also the processes which have to be, and also individually whom one can contact if ever there's a delay or whatever. I'm saying in this nutshell, one of the key issues is to have a strategic planning so that we can see what are the challenges inside, including what you said. There's no other way you can do without coming up with a proper planning. Taking from the report has been submitted by various board members and also by various departments within. Thereafter, we're able to sit around, because you cannot sit around while you don't have anything in your hand. Combine what is there in your hand, then you go out, you strategize, then you come back, you put to the chief executive office the mandate which has to be carried forward by himself or herself and his or her team. So therefore, you're able to judge from that particular point, but you cannot judge without putting a proper plan, fund of the relevant staff. Thank you.
Thank you. Looking around here again, let's see. I move on the line, Honourable Inspector Ndike Kalana. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Mr. Chabangu. Can you please briefly explain what would you identify as the five-year strategic objective or priorities of the board? And what system or processes would you implement to monitor and evaluate the progress made in achieving these strategic or objectives or priorities?
You are just very specific in terms of 5 years, which I will try, not 100%, but I'll try. You know, if your mandate is, you said correct, if your mandate is 5 years, you have to make sure around these 5 years, each and every person's mandate is 5 years. Therefore, what I'm trying to say here, in this case, this board has got 5 year term, which you have to make sure that each and every 5 years you deliver according to your mandate. Therefore, I'm saying the planning which one has to come up, the planning, you must make sure that within 12 months' time, you must able whether they are going to deliver in these 5 years. Within 2 years' time, you must able whether they are going to deliver in these 5 years. Therefore, what I'm trying to say, whatever plan, whatever strategy you are coming up with, you must make sure that the strategy you are able to judge within a particular time. In this case, I personally, I can refer to a 12-month period to able to judge if ever we are still moving towards a correct direction. So therefore, what I will try to conclude here, you have to chart, as I said earlier on, you have to chart the way forward, particularly starting as a priority, the key fundamental challenges you are facing with at a particular time when you enter inside. Because you cannot ignore those challenges because they are going to haunt you along the way. Firstly, you must start to unlock those. And also you must be able to know that if you take how long for you to fight or to try to address the decade. Because the decade, people are not going to judge you based on the decade. People will judge you from where you enter going forward, you know. But at the same time, you cannot ignore what happened previous. So in this case, what I'm saying, you have to put correct plan. Within that plan must incorporate key challenges you're facing with. So when I'm referring to challenges, I'm referring with core clients. Because that's where you have to judge yourself based on core clients. Who are the key clients to the institution? So therefore, I'm taking into account one of the questions was raised for delaying application from civil society side. So those are the key clients in this particular institution. Therefore, I'm saying the proper planning is to cater for 5 years, but that 5 years must be categorized for each and every 2 years, each and every 1 year. Because if you are going to charge yourself toward the end of the day, you will find you have messed up so many things. So that's why I'm saying the strategic planning, it has to be undertaken for each and every 12 months or after that. So if you see at the back, you see forward. This is what in print. And also I requested, even if I left something, I didn't cover the area of your interest, I was able to come back and also add. Thanks.
I'm looking at the Honourable Lyon just on that one.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Honourable Chairperson, Mr. Shabangu has identified the objective. But the second part of my question was, what system or processes would you implement to monitor this 5-year plan of yours? To monitor and evaluate the progress that you have made on those plans that you, on those 5 years plans. And to achieve your strategic objectives. You have the plan. So what processes will you put in place to ensure that it is successful?
Thank you very much. I think when it comes to, because here I'm looking at someone who is a board member, someone who is not permanent or full-time, whatever you can call it, whatever term you can use. I'm looking at someone who is a board member, someone who is playing a role to give a political direction, if I can say so. Not someone who is there on a daily basis. You have said correct. Now, we assume there is a plan. Because whatever mistake goes out in the public, no one will blame the staff. The public will blame the board because they are accountable on behalf of the shareholders. So therefore, I think the better way to handle this, very practical, although I don't want to dwell very much about what I said earlier on. Now, if we're talking about a strategy, the strategy cannot be a strategy without a time frame for a particular strategy. Then you have to put appropriate system in order to judge the strategy. Now, at a board level, I see at a particular time, because you must take into account there's some relevant committees, and there's a reason for this committee to operate, you know. At the overall level, the board is in charge for each and every committee. So what I'm saying, once you set up a strategy, you must make sure even supporting pillars indicate that they're selling to committees. You must make sure committees are in place and also operating within the mandate of the board and also within the time frame. Because when I talk about time frame, you cannot state exactly what are they until the collective take a decision. When I'm referring to time frame, I'm referring to at a particular point where you said, would I at a particular time to deliver the following project or to deliver the key issues which we have agreed. So therefore, in a nutshell, what I'm trying to say, I cannot articulate a particular system. As I said earlier on, I'm not someone who's academic in this particular, you know, but I'm someone particular at a policy level. So because if I'm talking about systems, there is a relevant people to put systems in place, but for us is to monitor, for us to play oversight role in terms of the CEO and the various directors or people involved in there, to make sure all our core mandates, all our key statistic issues are being, you know, tackled at a very, very accurate level. So therefore, if we refer to a system, I cannot say exactly this is a particular system which I can put in place, but at a collective level, I hope we have to strategize as to what are the key issues which we would like to see being delivered within 5 years or within our term of board. Yes.
Thank you very much. We have someone else who has asked, just refresh my memory, Honorable Kamalo, followed by Honorable Nicolana, followed by Honorable
Thank you once again, Chairperson. Mr. Shaban, how do you understand the difference between the roles of the Chief Executive Officer and the board? Also, what is the relationship between the board, the minister, and the parliament? Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much. I'll request honourable member to remind me if ever I left out something. Okay. The role of the chief executive office is an accounting office in the absence of the board. So that is the role of the chief executive office. An accounting officer, when I'm referring to an accounting office, is in charge for everything happening within the institution. But when it comes to the board is an accounting authority. The board is accounting on behalf of the shareholder, on behalf of the minister. So now you cannot blame the CEO when the organization is taking another direction. You can blame the board because it's an accounting authority, the entire board. Now, if we are an accounting authority, you cannot say, I can't answer about this box, where this box is missing. You cannot say, no, someone must account about this box. You are 100% responsible because the minister is not around, but there's someone who is around there, which is the board. Then the board is not around there at all times. The person is around the CEO. If the CEO is not around, then it's so automatically the CEO is going to dedicate, you know, to someone else. So, and also Matrix stating quite clearly, what is the role of CEO, what is the role of everyone, what is the role of the board when we talk about Matrix. So therefore, my way of summarizing, the chief executive office is a custodian of every resource of a particular in the absence of the board. Once the board is around, is to check whether the CEO is still fulfilling for the mandate. So therefore, my definition, so the CEO is an accounting office on behalf of the board, and the board is an accounting authority on behalf of the minister. And the portfolio committee, so is a structure which is assisting the entire department, if I can put so, and also assist the MEC and also play the oversight role. Because my understanding, the portfolio committee is a custodian of that particular department, if I can refer, or that particular portfolio. So therefore, it's a duty of the portfolio committee to make sure that the National Economic Board is performing accordingly, because it's here to make sure that all what the means, all what the board is doing, so now is in line with the mandate of the particular institution. In a nutshell, this is my narrow understanding of the CEO and differentiate between the CEO and the board. One thing which caused a lot of contradiction, particularly between the CEO and the board, which I've learned in a number of times, and we have also disciplined some CEO, we fired some CEO. One of the challenges, one thing the board tends to have a huge impact, you know, individual impact in the institution, and you find it a conflict, you know, the board must act. The board must act accordingly at all times, but the board mustn't have impact. Whatever interest you can refer, the CEO must have entirely free hands to move, you know. So the board must not act as an employee, because you can't put it in and out at any time. That one is going to jeopardize the CEO to deliver. The board must say to the CEO, this is what you're supposed to do. This is like let me say, for example, you find the CEO sometimes is not acting accordingly because of interference of the board. The board mustn't interfere to the daily running of the institution. The board must come and like the portfolio committee. So the portfolio committee is here to make sure, you know, for this department, but the portfolio committee cannot be there to the department, you know, on a daily basis or whatever. The portfolio committee is to play oversight role. That's why I'm referring to this case. The board must be there to assist wherever they can assist, but not to interfere on a daily basis of running institution. Then institution will tend to take another direction. So that's what I can, I was trying to add what I have done throughout my years. Okay.
Thank you. Honorable Ndika Launa.
Hello, Dr. Mine is just to check, say you have the CEO now. Around management of the CEO, how would you ensure that as a board you give the CEO realistic targets? And also, on the performance of the CEO, how do you ensure that such performance is measured accurately?
Okay. Thanks. I think this question is more critical and is more important, because in our life, you would find someone going out and saying, you know, this board is not realistic, you know, so this board, you know, so all these type of things. But what really I can try on this one, you know, when you talk about to be realistic, it is not easy to be realistic while you're under pressure to deliver. You will end up, if you are going to be realistic, because you must remember the CEO is there in full time. The board is not a full time. That's why what is more critical, when you enter inside, that's what I said earlier on, when you enter inside, you must go out and develop a strategy, or even a strategy in place to review that strategy to suit your current mandate. And the staff during that process, the CEO during that process, everyone who's involved, and they are part of strategic planning in order to come up with a project, which that project is going to be owned by the board and the institution, by the organization. Because you cannot come up with a strategy which is not going to be owned, particularly by the CEO and the people under him or her, you know. So that's why in this case, what I'm saying, the way of going out and sit with the senior staff at a particular corner of this camp and the starting guy, you bring them in order for them to be realistic, because those guys in the board at all times before you come, and also get people who have expertise in this world to make sure that all what you are going to agree upon is a religious thing. I don't believe the executive which is supporting the CEO can come up with a project as a strategic planning, you know. So with a project, which one you call it as unrealistic project. So therefore I'm saying, once you act quality, you know, so particularly when you develop a project, the project must be owned, because the people who are inside, you must own the project. But if you are going to impose a project without proper consultation, but at the same time you mustn't compromise your mandate, because you may come up with a project which is going to compromise because of the staff in this case, or its negative, the CEO, they have influence in terms of giving you guidelines around of key issues in relation to strategic planning. What I'm saying, you have to safeguard your mandate. When you develop a strategy, you must make sure we are incorporating the view of internal and outside, which would make you to judge which are the time frames you are going to set. But I cannot say here, this is a time frame we can set, but you have to set up time frames. And also there's the last one, which I hope you will repeat, the last one which you stated, I want to talk about it. Okay.
Through your chair, how then would you make sure that the performance of the CEO is measured accurately?
Okay, let me say it firstly. I'm not too sure what can be practice of this board, but the chairperson of the board is the chairperson without the deputy, the chairperson of the board, his or her duty is to make sure that of the board, the CEO at all times is there to fulfill the mandate. Okay. The chairperson at all times must report to the board from time to time if ever there's some challenges. Okay. So, because the board cannot be there at all times. And the relevant comment, I think when it comes to question of metrics and also a performance assessment, depending when are you going to do, but mostly that one is done on the first month on the first month basis, the performance, you know, of the CEO. Because that's why you have to judge whether the CEO is doing his or her, you know, daily work in terms of what you have set down and also within the matrix. Because matrix will tell exactly anyone who is there in the system what one is entitled, what one must do at a particular time. So therefore my understanding to judge the CEO is to judge the CEO in terms of the matrix, in terms of the program you have set for the CEO to perform, including or in line with the strategic planning which we have produced, you know, earlier on. Therefore, in this particular case, I refer to the chairperson who at all times must make sure that, because CEO cannot be supervised by anyone in this institution except for the board. The board cannot supervise the CEO, but the chairperson who must make sure from time to time the chairperson or the CEO is performing such duty. So, and also the question of the CEO performance will also make the board to perform or to deliver. If the board, if the CEO cannot perform his duty, therefore the board also is not going to deliver. Because you cannot have the board deliver while the CEO is not performing or the CEO is not complying with the daily duty or with the time frame which has been given by the board for a particular time. So that's what, in a very narrow way, I can say. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Honorable and the best person.
Thank you. Mr. Shabangu, you've already referred to some of your board memberships and other governance roles that you have played in the past. Can you tell us what high-level responsibilities are you currently involved in? And, for example, what board memberships and other senior level management experience would you bring to the Barclays board?
Okay, thanks very much. Let me say, I'll start by remembering something when I started to be a board of Lady Smith Provincial Hospital. our boat. Now, I remember those days, you know, when I was a boat there, you know, there were a lot of tents which were very late at times because I was coming from the personal background. So I used to sit on the worker's side, but at that time it was difficult for me because I was sitting to the other side, you know. So I intend to talk different language. But in a nutshell, what I'm saying, I accept to me KwaZulu Natal Wildlife Board, which you call it KwaZulu Natal Nature Conservation Board. I think now is the 6th year now, which our term is going to end next year. If I can say to you, for just your information, in South Africa, it's not in Sussex. That board where I'm sitting is the only board, provincial conservation board in South Africa, where you find the police which says the institution is looking within the protected and outside of the protected area, the conservation and ecotourism. The one time in South Africa, especially was during the time, our part of developing that policy. But we could have read my side because always in my heart, the community, particularly the rural community, in my heart, you know, okay, you'll find them for living a time, you won't find anyone. And also there's a community there, community level fund also is here in KwaZulu Natal, not in any corner of South Africa. Community level, when you go to KwaZulu Natal, you enter to the park. You pay 10 rand if you are going to sleep there. You pay 10 rand. Now, this 10 rand is going to be divided as follows. 4 rand is going to go to develop entire communities of KwaZulu Natal, 4 rand. 6 rand is going to go to neighboring communities. So I'm a chair of that community because I was involved developing this type of, currently the sand park, they want to call it this one. When we live there, I can tell you we live in Ekris, I can tell you. And all MECs, I work with them, all of them, because whenever you hand over clinics, you hand over schools to the community. Recently, we hand over 5 circles around in Wabum. I'm always waiting with the relevant MEC. So I know in terms of, you know, how to work with particular someone like MEC, the shareholder. So these two fundamentals, for me, even when I die today, so people whom I work with, they don't tell me about this, you know. So I'm very proud about that one. The reason why I'm saying this one, because this particular institution which I'm sitting here in, you know, so one of the key issues is to take the question of rural communities, you know, because the way they are suffering. And national lottery report is one of the challenges in South Africa, because when we talk about funding, we find it very tired to those well-developed areas. I'm referring to urban areas. But when you talk about areas such as in Wabum, such as Mshumayo, such as Etwombe, those are the areas which you have to make sure that you assist them. Coming up at the national level, I have part initiating. Oh, thank you very much, man. Okay. Okay. Thanks. Hey, thanks. Okay. Thanks for reminding me. Okay. When it comes to national, I was involved to something which I didn't know what I'm involved in. We initiated an institution at the national level, which we call it CETA, for natural resources. When we started, our sister, for example, was Western Wildlife. At that time was before 1984, when I started to sit there as someone who is not part of that system, as an observer. I still remember those painful days. So because for me the interest, I was jumping out from the union going to sit to this, you know, so because I wanted to learn. As a result, after 1984, I was the first person among other people to be appointed to sit to the National Standard Generating Board for National Generating National Standard Generating Board to generate natural resource, you know, qualification. So I sit there, you know, so I remember because there's no incentive to sit there. But I sit there for almost 4 years. Okay. So we've done a lot of laying foundation there. Then later I was appointed to sit to the National Road Bridges Registration Council by the MEC, the minister, Dr. Lindo Sisulu, to the National Road Bridges Registration Council. One of the key challenges, there was no board. The board collapsed. We entered there 2 years without any board. There was a 2 year period without any board. And the minister, I still remember, and she said, go out and work there. That's what Dr. Lindo Sisulu, she said to us. Go out and work there. We started from scratch. As you remember, the institution was acting without any secretary or without any board, without any council there. We started from scratch. We dealt with the Lakers quite 12 months dealing with the Lakers because there were so many issues, there were so many decisions were supposed to be done by the board, and those decisions were taken by the staff, as you can see. So I learned a lot out of that background. So we left the NSPRC in April of this year. So with entirely operational organization, the new board took over from us in a very thin place. Even today, they are very happy about. What in fact, there's a comment which I won't forget. I was telling a comment which is, in this case, is a board matter comment. There it was a council matter comment. So that comment, the main task was to give the protocol. The way the council, because it's a council there, the way the council must behave. I was a shell of that one because I was the sponsor of that particular committee. So now that committee is today because one of the areas is to make sure that in terms of the protocol, we set up clear protocols. How are we going to work with the shareholders, meaning how are we going to operate and how to communicate with the relevant portfolio committee, and also how to follow internal protocols. So therefore that committee was set up to the custodian of the protocol. We did it. I never hear any board where we find a specific committee dealing with the protocol, how to handle portfolio committee relevance in that institution. Our part of our training that committee there to the NSPRC. This is a very small background, this is a very brief, you know, so I can say now, when we refer there to that board, the current minister, as I'm, you know, it's busy now reviewing NSPRC, its existence, whether it's relevant or not, but we set up that one. We said, let us make sure that the new board, the new minister, who's going to take over after, you know, so it's going to make sure that the public understands. The way to understand is to review and give the public whether this is still relevant or not. So that process now is on, which we have laid down. Thank you very much.
Honourable Khadevi was earlier. Thank you, we can have that. We're just coming to the end. Do you have your hand up, Honourable Kamala? Honourable Lyon? Right, Honourable Lyon?
Honourable Khadevi, sir. Thank you, Chairperson. Baba Ushawang, you correctly differentiated between the rural and the urban community, how they did the different development there. And then what you also said that to come from the NGOs, community-based organization. So, the question I ask here is that you know that when you go move to the urban areas, there's development and knowledge. But when you move to the rural areas, where you come from, there's lack of knowledge, lack of skills. Right? So we find that, sometimes we find that in those rural areas, there are NGOs or CGOs
which deserve to get the benefits from the lottery board, but they don't get it because of the level capacity. How are we going to help them to ensure that they get these benefits from the national lottery board?
Thanks very much. Let me start by saying several things. This question is very painful because it's a reality. You cannot, in particular in South Africa where I know very well the reality. That's why earlier on one talk about a reality, realistic, what we call. Let me tell you something which I think few of members of the portfolio committee in the Eastern Cape in South Africa. We had a challenge while we were there in the NSBRC. We had a challenge there for ratification of those subsidized houses. So the situation was chaotic there. What we have done there, we said about 40,000 houses are going to be demolished, you know. But in order to address the question which we are raising, we said we are not going to follow the normal process. You know, so in order for us to assist our emerging rural, you know, enterprises, we went down there to meet the HOD of housing there in the Eastern Cape. We said, we would like to see a woman in a rural area, a woman who got no knowledge about building, that woman to enter, you know, to this particular industry. Now, we agreed, we set up a strategic planning to come up with something. Particular for rural, you know. Then, we came up with a planning which would say, in order for, because we have not, we mustn't compromise the project. That's why our challenge. While we are also making sure everybody is part of the process, but at the same time, you mustn't compromise. Because once you compromise the project, you will end up also failing to deliver, failing also to achieve what we are intending to achieve. Then we said there will be a main contractor. Now this contractor is going to outsource, for example, to demolish a house. To demolish a house doesn't require any academic or any knowledge to demolish. It will come with a hammer, you know. But we said these people are going to do this one. They must do it in an appropriate way. And also when you build, the people are building, that's why now you need this particular thing. We come up with enterprise development there, which we ended up having 250 people who never been in the business. Let me come now in a very short way, referring to what you have said. For me, as an individual, when we enter there to the board, the first issue is to exact, come up with a strategy. I'll be very simple. To identify, as you know before, we have this presidential property note, you know, which are very poor. Now, come up with a strategy, how to be in line with the whole planning of the government, and also to be in line with key areas where government have identified, particularly rural areas. And now, to put system in place to make sure that, particularly at the provincial level, the environment must be conducive at the provincial level. Because these people are coming, you know, to make sure that the staff, certain members, are dedicated to look after rural, you know, civil society. So that you come up with a very, very, you know, easier way of them to apply, or the way of them to access information. The information also, as you know very well, most of this information is very difficult for the poor people on the ground, you know. And also to simplify the application processes, but at the same time, not to compromise the basic principles or the basic requirements of the institution, but at the same time, you mustn't have a very thick document for this, as I have seen the current applications, a thick application which women from in our rural area, they cannot even enter 3 pages, let alone for 30 pages. So in this case, what we are saying, you must set up, what I'm saying, you must set down the very simple. For example, in the institution where I'm at board now, we had 15-page application form. We reduced into 3 pages. We said the first entry to fill in this 3 pages. Then the second point now is to send samples within the institution to go there in the rural area to sit there with the municipality, to assist these people, to call at a particular local municipality, these people coming together, and assist these people, but not only to discuss the relevant information, but to assist to another level, in order these people to compete, you know. So we set up that particular thing, and the municipality, now they are playing oversight the role, you know, to avoid this corruption and whatever, you know. So those are, because no one who can say, I will come with take one, take all, you know, system. But the system must be also reduced, but the key point, at the national level, the CEO must dedicate certain staff, you know, or within that particular task to add the rural, you know, so as you have said correctly, you know, because these people, they must assist, they to like it or not. Fortunately, I'm the one of those who never gets any fed from this particular institution. We have applied for 4 years, five, so we never get anything because of the challenges we're facing with there, you know, national. So that's why I'm talking in a nutshell, in this one, because I'll end up my heart changing, you know. So, but this is what I can say, there's a challenge for rural communities to access it there. It's one of the issues why I have to apply for this, to assist in particular for our people there on the ground. So then, at the same time, but not to be fairly biased, even to every, because even every area, I can tell you, they are family as you know very well. But at least you must make sure that we are balancing, you know. So you mustn't be very, very sympathetic or to be very much focusing to a particular sense. Thanks, Jefferson.
Thank you. Honorable
Kamala,
followed by Honorable Line. Now, I just want, with your statement, Jefferson, to remind that candidate not to come close to the mic, because while you he will try to listen, he ends up not even hearing a word that is uttering on the mic. With your respect, Jefferson, thanks.
We have said that you'll see sometimes I move back in my chair in a symbolic gesture for yourself to follow. So one of these issues, the mic, huh? Honourable Helen Ryan.
Thank you, Honourable Jefferson. But, Shabangu. In the okay, thank you. In the instance where funds were disbursed to an NGO or a VBO or what else, for the board to assess the impact that the fund has made, what must they do? Thank you. In your own words, how do you think they must, what strategies should they implement to make sure that they assess the impact that the fund has made? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Hey, I'm not sure now. Thanks, Honorable Member Kuman. Yes, okay, thanks. Okay. Thanks. I think this term, impact, is very critical. This question of impact. What impact, you know? So, okay. I can say what is more appropriate, because the challenge, if you give someone this bottle of water, there's a reason for you to give someone this bottle of water. Now, so, and you must make sure this bottle of water is going to be utilized according. Okay, there's no compromise, there's no other way. People, they used to talk about taxpayer money. I've listened so many people talk about that term. So we shall not use to use it. I'm saying in this case, when funds of the institution disperse to a particular organization, you must be in a position to set up ways and means to check whether this person is still using alcohol instead of cold drink. Now, in this case, I'm referring, if an application was approved to do the following, at some stage, you must set up to check exactly whether the institution still complying on what they requested, because if they want to change, they must come back, you know, to the funder or to the sponsor, you know, in this case. You cannot change what you have, you know, unless the sponsor have allowed you. If you said you want to drive 20 kilometers, along the way, now you see, no, I have to drive 100 kilometers, then you must go back to seek another mandate to drive this particular one. Okay. So in this case, what I'm trying to say, in the institution of this nature, the board must set up a system which would enable in South Africa to make sure that at a particular time, this particular beneficiary, if I can put on that term, this particular, at a particular time, this beneficiary will receive amount of this at a particular time. At a particular time, for example, you would hire a service provider to do what we call a study. Excuse me. A start. Oh, thanks. Thank you very much. I didn't want to lose it because that's really what I'm talking about. I'm kidding. You said allow me, you know, to lose it. This is a sample. Okay. So, as already Chairperson has said, I can drink this water, but I was not going to drink this water until the Chairperson allowed. That was at the protocol, you know, you must follow. And now, in this case, what I'm saying, at a particular time, to hire a service provider, which service provider who is able to tell you what impact, for example, if this service provider will have dispersed so much, you know, so for the following reasons, then go out and dig this and come back to us whether this particular amount has been utilized accordingly or not. The service provider will come back and report. According to the report, because service provider will be very much neutral, if I can use that language, Chairperson. The service provider will give the senior management and the board the overall of impact, because the board or even the staff, most of the time they don't have that capacity, you know, most of the time. I assume, I'm not too sure the capacity there, but to give a service provider to go out and also handle the issue of the rural, because the impact, you must be able to judge, even the amount which you're taking out, how much your target for rural community, what is your target amount must go there, that's why you're able to judge, how much 30% to the community, to the urban community. But when you do assessment, according to what is your planning, what is your target, you know, for rural and urban. So in this case, what I'm saying, in a nutshell, you outsource this question of assessing, you know, the impact of the amount that is dispersed to the public, you know, so that the person will come back to you, you know, to tell you back. And this thing mustn't take a long time, because you find a lot of challenges there, and you pay a lot, because the service provider will come back to you and say, one extension of the scope. And once you extend the scope, the portfolio committee will kill you, you know. So because when you extend the scope, you must go back to the public and tell the public, this institution requires extension of the scope, you know. You cannot just in the boardroom extend the scope, you know, as I said earlier on. So those are the challenges, because I can tell you now, most of the government departments are facing a challenge of this extension of scope. Because one will come tender for this one box. One inside wants now for 10 boxes. He's inside now. He knows the team or she or he knows the system starting out to extend. Someone will find now is a brother for everyone there inside. So those are the things must be very careful for this extension. Those extensions allow CEO, allow executive, you know, to this extension section. And we find sometimes 120 extensions. How much these extensions now, you know? So, and these things of dividing the cake, because we find the CEO in terms of my feet, the CEO can dispense certain amount to the CEO. And we find now this amount has been, you know, so now divided. We find 5 million has been divided into 50,000, you know. So if as a board, we don't caution about these things, those are the things which make this particular portfolio committee sometimes to fight about how you can extend the scope without going outside. So that's why I'm trying to, you know, elaborate on this one, because it's one of the thorny issues which are facing most of the board. Thanks, Chairperson.
Right, thank you for sharing that with us, Mr. Shabangu. Right, sharing so much on that level, I was now referring to you as honourable. Mr. Shabangu, I just want to check with the committee. We really have exhausted the time on this, but clearly I just want to check. You have fortunately expanded on a number of points, but obviously I just check with the membership here if there is anything. But it would seem as if we have been able to explore a number of issues because you have engaged us in this particular manner. And once again, Mr. Shabangu, I want to thank you most sincerely on behalf of the committee for availing yourself, making yourself open to being a nominee for the National Lotteries Board, but also coming down to Parliament so that we could interview you in this regard. Now, Mr. Hermans, Mr. Hermans, clearly I need some water. On my right, the committee secretary has been engaging with you all along during the processes, getting you here. He will continue to keep you informed of the processes and the deliberations as we move along. He has the telephone numbers, he has other contact details, that is here. The hurling up is on my left, the content specialist. So we ourselves have concluded, but obviously there's a short statement.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want just two things. I must be very honest in front of the members, honourable members of this committee. If I can give some points, the way I have communicated with the staff, I can give you 98%, not 100%, because you must give someone 100%. I want to be very frank and honest. This committee, to be honest, you know, so I'm very proud of it now, because even this morning, you know, I had some challenges, but I can give you a guarantee. Everything was sorted out. I'm very proud of that one. Secondly, as a way which I would like, there is something, I'm not sure the mandate, something of taking this issue of rural challenges. The area everything for forensic audit, when the board enters there, to get it back, forensic audit is very important to be proactive, so that the portfolio committee can follow consistent about that as to what the report coming back to the minister and the report coming back to this particular committee, so that the committee would know the board started on this day. When they enter, it was this day has called. So from this particular point onward, the board is expected, rather than keeping complaining about the delay. Now, once you know exactly what is there, everybody knows that you are not going to be by the bush if you don't deliver. Because of the forensic report, which will be in your hands, you know, then it starts from a new place going forward.
Indeed, you are certainly assisting me in this regard, and I must say it's heartening when we get compliments from members of our staff underlining their performance and hard work. But I thank you once again. And honourable members, you'll be happy to learn that there's a little something, I suppose, the door opening, we could smell a spot of food, and so on. So let me just for a short while, and really not long, I would like members to avail themselves of what is available there and to return in 5 minutes. Maybe 7 at the very most.
Thank you. It is now 10 past.
And you'll be Min taksi de sudan ana bunun. Min taksi de sudan ana bunun.
Certainly looks like most of us are here. I really want to apologize to you, Honorable Shlele, about the meal. Certainly the committee secretary will ensure that that's fully addressed. I think we didn't notice from the past that normally we would have had that extra, what can I call it, the cheese, well, not so much cheese, but the plant, as you wrote, was a vegan. I don't want to get too specific in case I expose my own ignorance. Let me just leave it as a vegan. But I think we are all here, and I do want to invite Mr. Tabedi come forward, and obviously there is a few refreshments this year, canned, some water, as well as some apple cider, if you could prefer that to grape juice. But there we are. Mr. Tabedi, we really must thank you most sincerely for availing yourself not only to the NLB, but basically to the country there in agreeing to be nominated. Coming here before us today, that is the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry, so that we can interview you for positions available. Just to indicate how we will work, my name is in the first place Joan Spott, the Chairperson of Trade and Industry. And on my right, the man who's been dealing with a great deal, Mr. Herman. It's amazing what a glass of water did to my memory. So we have Mr. Herman here, the committee secretary. And on my left, Ms. Hooley, the content specialist. And on my right, we have members of the Portfolio Committee of Trade and Industry, plus other observers behind them and support staff. We're going to move forward on the 40 minutes that we've allocated, and the idea would be for members to ask you certain questions, engage you, and immediately after one of them has, please respond. So you'll switch on your mic and then switch it off after that engagement. So we're right ahead on track with the Honourable Shlele on board first. Honourable Kamalo, I'm not sure if that was a hand or just saying hello. Honourable Kamalo. Difficult, we all drink some tea. To know what is meant as a gesture. Right, are we all right with the two names so far? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Well,
just in short, can you tell this community about your past experience and relate those experiences to the contribution you would make to the board? Secondly, what in your opinion would be the main criteria, the ideal characteristic for the board member? Thank you.
Thank you.
Let me take this opportunity to thank you, Madam Chair, and the honourable members for the opportunity accorded to me. In responding to the first question, my background is that of first and foremost an activist, someone who's been working within communities. I actually came from the trade union movement. That's where I actually started my activities after leaving activities from school. My work involves that of representing the interests of workers in the sector, with the factory floor. And then immediately after the 1994 dispensation, I then worked within government, where I was an officer, a Speaker of the House from 1994 to 1999 in the Northwest Province, a member of the Executive Council from 1999 after the previous election, two consecutive terms. And my role, therefore, was, I would say, political management, to run management of department which I was mandated to lead. Now, in as far as my role is concerned, or the character speaks of a board member, I think a board member, especially a board member for the portfolio in question, must be someone who is transformation oriented, someone who is interested to ensure that every day when you wake up in the morning, you aspire that you can make a contribution that impacts the lives of the people in a positive way. And a board member is also someone when, at the end of the day, when you knock off, you sit back and say, what contribution did I make, especially to bettering the lives of those who were previously disadvantaged, using the resources at your disposal as you were actually allocated to make sure that you make such contribution. I would say that would be a characteristic of the board.
Thank you.
With your own understanding, what do you envisage as main functions of the National Board, of the National Lawsuit Board? Thanks,
Madam Chair. And honourable member, the main function of the National Lottery Board is actually to advise the minister on matters relating to the issues of the lottery, to also monitor the functions of other lotteries which are accountable to the National Lottery, or which operate within the mandate of the National Lottery Board. And I think it's important also to make the point that the Lottery Board, the main function there is to regulate the legal lotteries and make sure that illegal lotteries are prohibited. And I think it's the main function, so that we don't have a ballooning of boards which are not properly regulated. So I think the board has got this major function, but also to ensure that within monies appropriated to it, and within the mandate allocated to you by the Act, it ensures that the money directly directed to where it's supposed to go using the laid down criteria. But fundamentally, to ensure that the monies make sure that they deliver to the people that are intended to. In other words, if, for example, it is aimed to play a particular role in a particular community, there has to be mechanisms to ensure that such roles are there. And I think the board plays a critical role to ensure that that happens.
Thank you.
Part of the work of the board is to advise the minister for the efficacy of the legislation you passed concerning the notaries. In your own opinion, what are the deficiencies in the implementation of this legislation now? Are there any urgent things which you think that must be brought to the attention of the minister to keep up?
Well, in terms of the current legislation, without being specific, I would think that matters that need urgent attention would be matters in relation specifically to the implementation and the information and education around the functions of the lottery. And I'll tell you what I mean. I mean, for example, you find a situation sometimes where people believe that gambling is meant to ensure that we can take everything that we have and throw it into gambling. And I think it's a major problem. The reason why the legislation is set, you have to regulate the legal and prohibit the illegal. I think it might go further to say, how do you then communicate that message constantly and consistently to the population as a whole, so they must understand that if you work, whatever level that you earn, it does not mean that you can aspire to become a millionaire and take whatever you have every day and throw it into the lottery. By doing so, you destroy your family. So I'm making a point there for that. One thing that needs to be done in this legislation is to ensure that you build in mechanisms that can ensure that information goes down to ordinary people to understand that maybe lottery can just be something for fun, but not something that people can use to think that, you know, they can take whatever they have and throw it there, and tomorrow they can be rich. So the point I'm trying to make therefore is information, communication, and education. I think those are the elements that need to be succinctly built in to ensure that people understand the function and the role that lottery can play in their lives.
Some NGOs and other institutions are dependent on the provision of promised lottery funding to implement their programs. Often this funding is not provided soon, quickly enough, in appropriate time frames. How would you address the delays in the distribution of the funding and the delays that we are experiencing at the moment? What remedial actions would you propose to improve the ailing relationship between the National Lottery Board and the distribution agencies?
Well, I don't have the details actually in terms of the staff complement or component of the Department of Trade and Industry as the mother body of controlling the board. But I would think that if I am in a position of influence, I would say that what you need, therefore, is to look at competent people who are given specific tasks of ensuring that, because you see that the transference of money and follow up to make sure that it is properly utilized is a very important function. Therefore, you need dedicated staff. And my view in terms of cost containment will be, you may identify people within the DTI itself, the department, and utilize them so that you don't have to pay more to use the resources that we have
to extend them a little bit to do more, but those people must be properly trained in order to be able that such functions are performed with distinction. But otherwise, if the monies are not transferred on time, it affects the communities for which the monies are intended and defeats the whole objective of having a fund that is aimed at ensuring that certain communities can actually benefit. So I would say that you need a dedicated staff that can be derived and trained from DTI itself without incurring federal staff and make sure that their function is to ensure that those monies, because that's the core function of the board, so those functions are actually fulfilled.
Thank you, Honourable Indipalana.
Right to it. From my side, I would like to share with us very, very briefly what would you identify as a 5-year, you know, strategic objective, particularly of priorities for the board. Here is the board, newly established, it blocks out its 5-year strategic objective, it has tracked for whatever its priorities. What do you see as the priorities of the National Lotteries Board now? But linked to that, here's the strategic objectives. Now, share with us what kind of system or processes would you put in place and monitor and implement to monitor now progress, to monitor as well as evaluate, the progress in achieving those objectives. Thanks.
Thanks. For me, the strategic objective of the board, linked to your question, will be to ensure that the lives of ordinary people are transformed using the resources and categories identified as the main tool and the main barometer that you use to see as to how far you can succeed. So for me, I would say that would be the benchmark that you use, because fundamentally you want to change the lives of ordinary people using the criteria as established by the Act. So therefore I would see that as strategic objective that you must pursue. Yes, whatever you do must radiate from that objective. So having said that, I therefore think that the mechanism that we have to use, if I use the right term that we use, the mechanism that we have to use, in my view, will be to ensure that the members of the board themselves must allocate themselves some political functions. Each one of them must be responsible for certain political functions which are linked to all the criteria that are there. So that we are able to say, because if you don't give it a political need, the likelihood is that you may end up having programs but no one taking responsibility for those programs. So I see that as the first step whereby you have this political head will make sure that in each and every board meeting, all of us must report in terms of our different functions, how we have impacted. It will also even answer the question that was raised earlier on in terms of money is not being able to go to where they're supposed to go at the right time. Because money that they might reach a particular community, but reach that community. So I would see that for me as a very important and fundamental point of departure, whereby board members themselves give themselves serious responsibilities. And once we have that, annually, we'll be able to take stock of how far you have gone. And in doing so, it will help you even to change, amend, remove those aspects of the strategy that are actually helping you. And in the process, you build tactics that can help you. At the end of 5 years, you are able to say, we come from far and here we are now with tangible results.
Thank
Honourable Chair.
then, can you share with this committee your understanding of the difference between the role of the chief executive officer and the board? What's the difference? Secondly, what is the relationship between the board, the minister, and the parliament? Can you share with us your understanding of this, this aspect? Thank
you. The chief executive officer of the board, it's a financial administrator, someone who runs the administration of the board, financial and otherwise. In other words, it's an accounting officer. It's an administrative supervisor. It's someone who runs the day-to-day functions of the board. That's the chief executive officer. Now, the board, I would say, it's like a plenary, if you like. It's a forum where all political heads, if I may use the word, within the confines of a parastata, is all those parastata who are there, political heads who are there, whereby the chief executive officer accounts to, is important to them as to what are the issues that are bothering, what interventions need to be made. Secondly, the relationship between the minister, the board, and the CEO. I don't know whether am I phrasing the question correctly.
And the
parliament. So the parliament is an oversight body. It's a body that actually passes the act. The minister must report and account to parliament time and again as to what are the issues, if there are challenges, what are the challenges. If there are annual reports that must be tabled, the minister must take responsibility to ensure that those things happen. The board accounts to the minister. The minister, if he wants to do something with his relations, the board, the minister must therefore consult with the board and say to the board, these are the issues that I want to happen. For example, there's one part in the act where it says, if, for example, the minister wants to revoke a license of the board, the minister must do so. Let's say permission license was already issued. The minister got information that suggests that that board is going to do issues which are not legal, if I may use that word loosely. Then the minister can withhold that thing and then consult the board. Says the board, I have taken this particular decision because of the following reason, and then inform the particular notary that is affected by that particular decision. So I'm saying, therefore, that the board reports to the minister reports to parliament. Parliament is the one that passes the law and holds everyone else accountable, because that's where everything actually is finalized.
Thank you. The board will be assisted by a CEO. Now the question is, how do you as a board member ensure that the realistic targets for the CEO are set and that his or her performance is measured accurately?
Well, the CEO is someone who helps the board. But then the board will ensure that the time frames or whatever responsibility that they allocate to the CEO are measured in terms of what the board itself must see as reasonable. And I'm making this point on the basis that
the CEO must from time to time report to the board when in carrying the mandate he or she is given by the board. Difficulties are encountered. So the board can assess as to whether the mandate given is realistic or not. But surely there has to be all processes of appraisal to ensure that the capacity of the CEO is from time to time assessed and improved to ensure that he or she is able to carry the responsibility. Because we are living in changing world. Things changes. What happened yesterday is different from what's going to happen today. Therefore, I think that the CEO must be trained from time to time to ensure that he or she meets the requirements. But it's difficult to give a specific barometer. But on day-to-day assessment, through reports, through interaction, I think we can be in a position to see if whether the CEO is incapacitated, or whether the CEO is overloaded, or whether the CEO giving the correct up-to-date training will be able to meet the challenge. But the point I'm making is there has to be constant communication so that we can make timely interventions.
What high level of responsibilities are you currently involved in? As an example, any board membership or any senior level of management?
The last senior position I occupied was in the government, which I relinquished immediately after the elections in April. For now, I am not involved in anything formal except politically.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Well, I expected the specifics. Given the past involvement, what were you in which organization? And what are you, senior level management, in the political, I think it would be great to shed some light.
Well, the current position, as I already indicated, the last position that I occupied, management in government, the current position I'm occupying, I am a central committee member of the South African Communist Party. I am a member of the financial committee, which is called FINCO, within the party. I'm also a member of the participating commission in the party. Those are I don't have any position in church. Those are the positions I have.
Right. No, I think that clarification was also responded to. Honorable
Thank you, Chair. My question is, what suggestions would you bring to ensure that community-based organizations or non-governmental organizations that are deserving are able to access the funds from the lottery if they themselves lack the capacity to properly apply for that funding?
I think the approach that needs to be adopted is the one that says first we have to identify the number of community-based organizations. And that we can do by looking at the past history would have created some kind of
a framework in terms of what are the challenges that the board has been facing. And then obviously you have to understand first what are the challenges that they are facing that make them that make it difficult for them to access whatever funds are there. So if there are obstacles within the law, they have to deal with those obstacles. If, for example, the mechanism that you use, let's say, for example, we are using complicated forms, that makes it difficult for those community-based organizations to apply. We have to find a way of making sure that either you empower those communities or you find a way of relaxing those forms without opening the floodgate whereby everybody can come in who is not deserving and get the money. In other words, you combat fraud, but make sure that the deserving communities are able to gain access.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. In any economic situation, in particular the one we're in now, in which of digitalization and the globalization, each and every rent spent must get to the bill for money. So what strategies do you think should the board implement in order to assess the impact of the fund spent?
Well, the funds that the board has spent to different communities, I think we need to work closely with, let's look at the issue of the grant, just an example. It cannot be the function of the board or DTI on its own. The Department of Social Development is actually responsible broadly to deal with those matters. Must definitely assist in ensuring that whatever money we dispense to the deserving people in the form of grants, because we know right now what are the challenges in that respect. So we know that those challenges, the only way to deal with is to form a partnership. So I'm making the point that we need to have partnerships both with recipients and those departments which are actually the principal department which deals with the fund. I use social development as an example. There is also an RDP fund. That's another area that we need to focus. So I'm therefore saying the only way to be able to get value for money is for the board to form partnership with those relevant departments and the distributing agencies to ensure that every cent that is distributed is accounted for. Although we don't make profit, but we can find ways of ensuring that every, and I agree with you, the economic recession demands that every cent that we dispense, we must be sure that whatever it is going, whether it be a seed, that actually grow more seeds. So my approach will therefore be, let's form partnerships, let's broaden the horizon and make sure that in terms of accountability, we've got many eyes, people can be sure that wherever there is a problem, they feed back, and by feeding back to us, they also assist in the process of making sure that we strengthen legislation to make sure that the money is actually going where they're intended to.
Thank you very much. So looking at the committee members, the honourable members here, just wondering if we while I was writing, if we had posed the question on how realistic the targets were, and being said, should we pose that to be revised? Well, perhaps I could ask that then if it hasn't been. But how would you ensure it has been? Okay, well, I think, look, I'd still like to pose something along those lines. How would we ensure that not simply that the realistic target is the ORC, but you indicated your background in government, both on an MEC level and etc., and your presence on some of these boards or interaction with them and that kind of thing.
in relation to both 2 men and 3 are to see their realistic performance target actually being set. How would you actually see this being set so that you could measure performance as already being posed accurately? I'm interested in terms of your current answer in this regard.
What I would say, I think the target, especially within the confines of the National Lottery Board, will be set in relation to, for example, the appropriation that you have. Let's say the money that you have will help you determine how many projects, how many committees are you going to touch? Because obviously you may want to set huge targets, but those targets need to be funded. So therefore, in addition to what I said earlier, I would say therefore that the resources at the disposal of the board will be the one that determines the realistic targets that you set. And the capacity of those who are in the board, especially the capacity of the CEO and maybe the capacity of the members of the board, will actually help the board to be able to reach the target. But we must also understand that targets will also have their own challenges that come back to the board, where people will start to say, yeah, but you see, you said you'll do this, you didn't do that. But I think it's important so that if you don't set yourself a target, you won't be able to work according to plan. A target helps you to stick to the plan and also helps you to spend to the limit of what we have and not to overspend. So I'm therefore saying, Madam Chair, that my view is therefore that target for them to be set is to be determined by the amount of money we have, and the amount of money to be fruitfully spent will depend by the capacity of those who are there to spend that money.
Thank you. Are there any other questions at this point? Just looking around. Then I really must thank you most sincerely on behalf of the committee, Mr. Smedley, for availing yourself, as I said earlier, and spending this time with our relations at Hint so that we could engage you during the interview. Mr. Hermans will continue to keep you informed of the process, deliberations, and once again, thank you very, very much engaging with us this afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you. If we may make this, I think we can make a break up for the
Elizabeth Malota Slovini for being with us, and also thank you for waiting to join us here. But more than anything, thank you for availing yourself as a nominee for this process of the National Arteries Board. We appreciate you here, and just to outline some of the processes. Mr. Herman, who's just down there in green jersey, usually sits here on my right. He has been, of course, contacting you, engaging you, keeping you informed, and will continue to do so. On my left is the committee content specialist, Ms. Margot Herning, and of course on my right, the honourable members of the Portfolio Committee of Trade and Industry. We, the way we will conduct this advocate Malotos Tefili is that members will, you know, pose any questions they may have, and if you would be kind enough to respond immediately to each question. And I'm sure that in the end we'll have sufficient time to go through the process ourselves. My name is Joan Fox. And on your left is a list of the committee. So as I call them, you'll also be able to note, and they'll raise their hands. And just a short warning to members and everyone, if we can just refrain from getting too close to the mic, it will help us all to hear very clearly what has been said and done. But as I said now, we move with enthusiasm into the final stretch, and it's over to, you see some hands, the Honourable Mr. Beethoven, Honourable Abebe, Honourable Mabasa.
Thank you. Thank you, Jefferson, and welcome to you. Ma'am, we've seen your CV, but unfortunately many of those names don't make a lot of sense to me. And therefore, the first question that I want to put to you is, briefly tell us about your past experience and relate your experience, your life experience, to what contribution you could make to the board, to the long-term board. And also, what in your opinion would be the main criteria for the ideal board member? This is your opportunity now to market yourself in terms of your experience and also the role that you play. And also, if you could expand as to your role at the Road Accident Fund and the Gauteng Gambling Board, I would appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. Maybe to start, what I would say is that I bring I don't know whether the wealth of experience is the right word to use, but I do have a lot of experience in regulatory work, and in all the boards where I have served, or in all the organizations, especially regulators where I have served. My role has not with enforcement of the rules. I believe strongly, I'm a lawyer, I believe strongly in principles. My experience has been that, you know, people who are not drifting off the legal profession at hand may want to achieve objectives but serve the broader objectives. But if we do not have a legal framework for doing them, at times people end up in trouble, not because they meant badly, but because they didn't follow the rules strictly. So in that respect, I know I bore a lot of people, but I'm the one who will always say, but guys, we don't have the regulatory framework to do this. If we want to go beyond what the law allows us to do, then maybe we need to put some other processes in place. In relation to the RAF, what happened is I resigned, I didn't stand for, they are also in the process of appointing a new board, so I'm not in the list. Because I think I've done my best, you don't want to get to a point where you're bored or boring. The thing is, as a board member, you should be able to attend and wait if you have served the people that you were there for. Maybe it's time to move on, and that is for me how I have failed. Although the minister hasn't done the appointment yet, I mean, the address went up, I didn't apply, and we expect the nomination to be done at any point. The housing building board is also a regulator. I suppose I've been a lawyer for more than 6 years, almost 6 years. I find myself in a position where I think I can be of more value to organizations with my experience to boards. I think for me it makes more sense. I mean, I've got younger guys who are running the legal firms who have the energy to go and fight in court. I don't enjoy it anymore. I've lost the heart for it, although I'm still in private practice. I've done an MBA. I'm interested in the business side of things. I'm interested in seeing how things hang together. And, you know, for me, the confluence where the legal practice and business side meet is at regulation. How do you regulate what? A business, it has to be a business, it has to be successful, it has to thrive, it has to grow, but at the same time it has to play within the rules. So for me that is what I feel I could bring and feel assistance to the board on. My other experiences really have been private sector. I've done a bit of this, I've been in some BE companies that I've certainly learned a lot. I think I have a lot of value to add. My practice currently is really in corporate governance. I have learned a lot of companies on governance, on rules, on how to run their affairs. I also do in the public sector space, I do a lot of reviews, compliance. You know, I review the work that either policies that government departments put up, whether they're compliant with the law, the alignment with legal frameworks. So that is more or less the value that I think I can add to an organization. Yes, they are not the good.
Thank you,
Honorable Kadebe. Thank you, Honorable Shepherdson. Mama Umlo of the Association, as an aspiring to become a member of the National Lottery Board, what do you think are the main functions or tasks of the board, of this body in particular?
I've looked at the Act and what it provides, and it seems the biggest function is to administer the fund, administer, make sure that the allocations are done as prescribed by the minister or the act to the distribution agencies, and issue the licenses that are required to be issued, and enforce the act in the sense that regulate the industry in the sense that people are not allowed to carry on activities that are against the spirit and letter of the law. I've seen a few people running to travel, being tired, and people like those who have stopped the state in their strength. F&B million, yeah, stock trading their strength constituency for the minister constituency. So for me, I mean, without really citing everything that the board does, for me, I thought those were the main functions, regulate the industry, issue licenses, and administer the funds.
I feel to you would be just to raise your voice a little so that we can all hear you very clearly. Thank you. And on my right again, Honourable Mabasu.
Thank you, Mama Sophie. I am asking a question which relates to the functions of the board. One of the functions of the board is to advise the minister on the efficacy of the current legislation. In your opinion, what are some of the challenges in the implementation of the legislation? Are there any areas and issues that you maintain should be brought to the immediate attention of the minister?
I just went blank, I have to admit. I have read, but it doesn't come to mind.
I think I answered the question. Let me follow up on the question. I think I may have asked. Because, you know, this area that we are engaging with is an area, in a way, it's not static. You know, you find if we go 10 years back, 20 years back, the environment is different, the challenges are different. And even the issues that the minister had to deal with or the ministry had to deal with, they change from time to time depending on the environment. So you would be working very closely with the minister, you know, in a way, or with a number of critical bodies.
Interrupt there for a minute. Sorry, Honourable Martin. I'm going to suggest that you may wish simply to break up the question. I think sometimes it's helpful, as we all know. But I want to request that you pursue your question if you wish. We can always come back to it as well, you know. But try to break up. We have all found that useful ourselves, but some of our, you know, the questions I've heard here being asked sometimes get a bit long-winded. So let's just try a little bit of a division there. Should we try that, I wonder? Without perhaps too much expansion.
Yourself. Should I put it? Oh, okay. No, I, in the same area,
following on the ways of Isaiah the justice. But thanks, Colin Chair. What recommendations would you make to the minister as you study the current challenges and as you study, because legislation is informed by what currently happens or by challenges. So what would you say in your observation? These are some of the issues that you would raise with the minister.
I may not be specific, but my own thinking is when there is a regulatory framework, it must be very broad and it must be overarching so that the regulations then are meant to change with the changing times. There are, in my opinion, various efforts that the industry or all sorts of industries that are using to promote their activities through lotteries, I mean, the sports and whatever. People see it as a very useful tool for promoting their industries, and if one wants to provide any sort of advice or sort of broad advice which is not linked to any specific issue on the regulation, one would really advise that the regulation shouldn't be heavy, but the regulation, the legislation shouldn't be very over controlling, but the regulation should be where the industry is adjusted from time to time to keep up with the times. I don't know whether I've answered the question. The retrospective is maybe more specific. Unfortunately, the remedy is that the board is dealing with currently didn't come to my attention. All I remember is there were complaints about money not getting distributed and, you know, those are things that I could pick up, but the pending issues that the board is dealing with currently.
Thank you. Honourable Vice-President, Honourable Khadeve.
Thank you, ma'am. You've just referred to what I'm going to ask you next, and that is the complaints that you've said that you've picked up in the delays of lottery funding reaching the non-governmental organisations or the community-based organisations. Now, the question is that some of these institutions are fairly dependent on this funding that they've applied for and that have been promised to them in many instances. Now, quite often, as we've said, this funding doesn't reach them within appropriate time frames. And the question is, if you were a member of the lottery board, how would you address the delays in distributing the funding? And also, what remedial actions would you propose to improve strange relationships that are currently there between the National Lotteries Board and the distribution agencies? Have you got ideas on that?
Well, I did some work with an NGO, and what I found was that organizations that assisted NGOs to report, because most of the time the problem is not the first time that goes through, it's follow-up times, where people get money and somehow they are unable to account for the money, and because they haven't accounted for the money, even if they are doing good work, they can't get more money because they haven't complied with the red tape, and it becomes a vicious circle. So what I found was that organizations that helped us as the NGO to report back to them were able to release money quicker, so maybe the reporting should not be left to the charities themselves only. There has to be an intervention from the distributing agencies to make sure, one, they don't give money in big tranches, give them in small tranches with specific expenditure line items. Just a way of facilitating how the money is managed to make sure that there is as little as possible chance of the money being mismanaged to help things along. And the level of reporting and the format of reporting be simplified and made more regular. Reporting once a year is just not good enough, because people are now looking for receipts that for things that they spent in January. They don't know where they placed things, and it is an end. So my own suspicion is the problem arise because people are not good financial managers. They don't keep proper records. And it's something that can be pushed aside. It has to happen. There has to be proper records. But how do you assist people who are non-financial to keep proper records, have them account regularly at short intervals?
Thank you. Honorable Khadeve, followed by Honorable Kamala.
Well, thank you, Chair President. Why do you think that I'm responsible for it? But short term, long term, and medium term goals. What will you identify as the five-year strategic objectives of the board, and how are you going to monitor the implementation? How are you going to monitor and evaluate the implementation of the achievement of the strategic objectives?
I would say one of the key strategic objectives of the board should be communicating very clearly. The message must go out and go out very clearly for people to understand what it is that we should, what is allowed and what is not allowed. My sense is part of the acceptance, I mean, business people are taking chances, but there is a level of activity which is not related to big business. And looking at it, I was actually surprised there were private lotteries and things like that. That I asked myself, to what extent is this in the public knowledge? To what extent do people actually understand that, you know, that this is allowed or this can be done? I don't know. My own sense was that maybe the information is not out there in the public domain. It is an industry. I mean, lotteries were not there in the past. It's not something that has always been part of South Africa. But if it's something that people can use, if it creates its own industry, why shouldn't the men on the street know that it's a potential business area? I don't know. For me, that is part of it. The next one is the distribution of funds in the most efficient way. I mean, the split, I believe the minister prescribed the split, but it's a bit skewed. I mean, what is going to sponsor and what is going to charity? There's a huge skew. I would say maybe there has to be a shift, because there's a lot of sponsorship that goes into sports. So I don't know how, for me, it would be one of the areas where there would be some serious thinking required. And the other thing is, how do you regulate the distribution agencies? I think the service level agreements must be very clear. They must do what they're supposed to do. There has to be a way of ensuring that those people keep the ground running or keep things moving. There shouldn't be bottlenecks and positions where nothing is happening and the flag is being borne by the lottery board. Probably those are the main issues I could think of as strategic options.
Thank you. Honorable Kamala, followed by Honorable Nine.
Thanks, Honorable Chairman. Remember, with your own understanding, Can you briefly tell us the difference between the role of the chief executive officer and the board? But secondly, what is the relationship between the board, the minister, and the parliament? Thanks, Chairperson. The minister is the executive authority. Parliament exercises oversight over what gets done by the board. The board oversees the operations of the notary's board not being board as in people, but board as the organization, and the CEO should be responsible for the day-to-day running of the organization. I don't know whether that's answered. Thank you. Want to see that, Honorable Kamala? Fine, thank you. Honorable Line, followed by Honorable Chikadana.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Then, Colossus Popile. This board was appointed in the and to ensure that everything is done, what performance measurements will you put in place to measure them?
Well, I mean, that in their government, they are, from the ministry, from the government, they are, what do you call them, objectives that government wants to achieve through specific entities. So, that has to be translated into what the agency itself does, and that will then be translated into the objectives of the board, and those will be the key performance areas of the board and the CEO, so that the CEO will be measured on the extent to which he is able, or the organization is able, to achieve the very specific objective. So some people use different methods to evaluate what the CEO does, but normally you sign a service level agreement with him, or a contract with him that says that he has to perform this to this extent, and if he doesn't, he doesn't pay bonuses. But there has to be a firm agreement on what the CEO does between the board and the CEO, and the board must evaluate the CEO periodically on whether he's achieving his objectives or not.
Right. I'm just trying to understand, was there a mic on at that point? Yes, fine, thank you. Honorable Njika Lama.
Thanks, Chair. Member of, from my side, just share with us any high level responsibilities that you are currently involved in, board membership, senior level management, over and above the two you've already alluded to. Government board in the area, any other board membership that you have, and any other senior management level, senior management positions they've held or are holding.
I did mention that I'm running a legal practice, and the MD is the managing director of my own law firm. It's a small firm, there are six of us, there are six attorneys. They are all young people with lots of energy. And with regard to the other boss, I have been involved in BEE Women's Empowerment Company, where I once am a director and in some instances the chair. I mean, BEE has gone into decline with the economic climate, so the things are slow in that respect. But yeah, with regards to my current firm, I'm a commercial lawyer. I also do a lot of regulatory work, as I explained that. And previously, positions I held out of the legal industry, I was employed at the City Council of Johannesburg. When it was still the Greater Johannesburg Metro Council, I was head of legal services. I've also worked with the NGO I alluded to, is the Black Lawyers Association. Legal Education and Training Center is the center, not the DLA, the organization. So, yeah, I was the project and training manager, I think. Any other questions, honorable members? Honorable Njigalona?
Let's look at community-based organizations now, NGOs and the like. Give us some suggestions on how would you ensure that such organizations that are deserving are able to accept funds, even if they lack the capacity to properly apply for funding. They lack the capacity to properly apply.
Funder would have to know that not only were the funds used for the right purpose, but they actually achieved the desired objective. That not only talks to the packaging, how the service were packaged. If you say you are going to pay for caregivers for 8 sufferers, it shouldn't just be about those people just rocking up and doing the little, you know, the least they can. Impact goes to the extent to which they are able to make a difference in those people's lives. And unless you speak to the people who actually are on the receiving end of the service, it becomes difficult. And if you look at South Africa, how many, it's so big. It's a big problem, and I have spoken about some level of customer satisfaction, but there has to be minimum criteria. The board would have to set minimum criteria to say, look, people can fail to do, let's say organizations can fail to do everything, but maybe if they succeed on these 5, if they can account for every cent they spend, if they can give the names of beneficiaries, if they can be able to provide some level of detail on exactly what it is they do, they should get the money without audits, without, you know, without heavy, serious accounts, heavy reporting responsibilities. So my whole thinking would be that there would have to be some minimum level of compliance that people would have to have for them to be able to get funding, rather than put too many things that may just hold up the process more. But they have to be critical. They have to be things that a lot depend on. You know, if someone says, I'm going to provide the service, if an NGO says, I'm going to provide the service, there has to be a minimum standard of performance that they have to be judged upon. The financial reporting that I have already suggested must be a short interval, but what they do must also be capable of being judged or evaluated, but you can't go to many requirements and make it difficult for them to comply. Does that make sense, I hope?
Thank you. Are there any other questions committee members would like to pose? Engage nominee on? Just looking around here. Right, are we quite certain? I was just looking at this. And you indicated while you are somewhat averse these days to going into the courtroom, you know, you do have other members of your organization, other lawyers, these youngsters running into the court here, and that you have a love of this, that's how you put it, you really enjoy the board, good governance, regulatory frameworks, and so on. Perhaps you can just expand upon that about the appeal that this may hold for you, because it does sound like you're going to retain this legal practice, but that you do have a slightly different interest these days.
Yes, I suppose if I was in a big firm, I'd be in a consulting firm. So I'm more interested in consulting. I'm more interested in engaging organizations
in a way that makes them function better. And that to me is the level at which I would like to interact. I'm always thinking of either going to the bench, but I'm thinking it is a different kettle of fish. Business is more interesting, people dynamics, pulling people around one objective and having them perform optimally to achieve specific objectives. That to me is the most interesting thing. I mean, you take strangers, put them in one place, and suddenly they are pulling in one direction. What makes boards work? What makes boards very, very efficiently? What helps the turf wars? Well, what breaks down the turf wars between boards and executives? For me, it's the most interesting thing because you have people with vested interests and they all would happily kill each other and not have to deal with each other at all. For me, yeah. I personally think that is one area where we need a lot of growth as a country.
Right, so having a look at the members, they don't have any further questions to pose. So at this point, advocate Kira Bokho Elizabeth Mulukutifile. We really must thank you. The portfolio committee of trade industry, as I indicated earlier, availing yourself, making yourself available as a nominee. I hope I also indicated that Mr. Herman will continue to keep you informed of our process and progress, and you'll be aware of our deliberations from immediately Mr. Herman on one hand. So once again, thank you very, very much for being here with us, being with the committee here this evening.
Thank the committee too. I had an hour of being called. I think it sounded good, but I'm in a tent. Thank you.
It's been a long day. Really, I must most sincerely thank members of the committee for applying their minds. No respite to them, half square, and coming back here. And at all times, being alert to the issues on hand and working together effectively as a team. So I think thank you very, very much in that regard. But just to ensure that the process continues, we are, through the Herman, the committee's secretary, following up on this tomorrow to ensure that people do get a deadline on time. We really can't afford to delay the process. And then just as a little reminder, so that is again in this room, and once again we start, if I understand, at 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock in this room. But if we can do what a number of committee members did, they managed to perhaps arrive here at about 10 to have a cup of whatever, coffee, tea, and just make sure we're here. It would also be useful if we brought our waveform summaries and things like that that we have been handing out. Thank you. And just a final reminder on Friday, I'm doing that right now, so that members who really are able to ensure their presence here on Friday at half-past 8. If you recall, that's at your own request, so then the possibility of not ending late, especially for people coming from the Popo, Northern Cape, you know, places where it's so difficult to get to from Cape Town.
So I am making an earnest appeal. Of course, the weekend beckons for a little sleeping. But once again, it was good to see members with such stamina, I must say. Are very welcome. And I'm sure Mr. Herman just wants to share with you transport arrangements.
Transport has been arranged for those members who've indicated that if they would require transport. Transport will be available at 8 o'clock in front of Mark's building. So members just who need to require transport just make their way by 8 o'clock to Mark's building.
Okay, it's not raining then.
Because
you
said
Mark's building.
Okay. No, it's more just Mark's building. They're standing on there. Sometimes it's more than quite busy outside.
So everyone able to
we can arrange for them to lock up the venue, but tomorrow morning they will have to clean here.
Suggest we do study the National Lotteries Board because some of the references and points made, I must say, were not entirely of my understanding, and I'm taking this home for bedside reading. But of course, you needn't do that, Nicholas. I think I should release you before you fall asleep.
Well, there's enough light.